This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening to all you dear listeners.
Good morning, Peter. How do you do?
I'm doing fine. The weather is not too good on this Monday morning here.
Exactly.
South of Munich. It's raining. It's raining everywhere in Bavaria, I heard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's raining in Austria a lot. Kudos to the firefighters and all the guys who helped there. Thanks a lot. Peter, what do you have?
What do we have? A couple of topics. First one is that reinforcement learning is back. We all heard, I assume by now, it's a couple of days back, the new OpenAI, is it 01 or 01? Actually,
Strawberry.
They call it 01 or not.
It's called Strawberry, right?
Well, yeah, no, but in the meantime, it's not Strawberry anymore. I think it's 01, actually. So yeah. I think they put the counter back. I'm not going to talk to the details of that one. But what I thought was really interesting is kind of a reintroduction of reinforcement learning, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about reasoning, which is, of course, very controversial, you know. So many people who've been doing this for so long time say only humans can reason. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into that discussion. It's about what they say is O1 things before it answers. You can follow this step-by-step approach, and they, in the end, reach towards a PhD level of accuracy, you know, physics, biology, a couple of special things. And they have a large-scale reinforcement learning algorithm, which teaches how the model thinks, is what they say, productively. So we recall RL, reinforcement learning, was introduced to us, how long ago? 3-4 years ago, by Jan Kautnik.
Kautnik. No, it's not Kautnik, it's Kautnik.
Kautnik, because Kautnik. You visited, I think you mentioned it maybe last
him,
time,
yep.
Jan,
yep.
A couple of weeks back. And he's going to be a session speaker at our conference at the Danube, a couple of weeks from now.
Yep.
And it was Jan at that time, Hanover Messe 4 or 5 years back with Festo. There was the hand, right? And there's another couple of, I think he did something with Audi at that time. Was it the self-parking? And that was all about reinforcement learning. I was involved myself in the translation of a book that was by Alexander Tsai, Brandon Brown, Introduction to Deep Reinforcement Learning. So as we used to say, it's all about the way that we educate our children, right? As long as we still have children, small children, we tell them, you know, what it is we would like them to do, how to live, what are our values. And if they do something good, we reward them. Now, I hadn't heard, as I say, except for, I think, what was called RLHF, reinforcement learning, you know, for human feedback. You recall that was introduced to make sure that the models don't do things outside of our value. There you go again. Same thing like educating our children, right? But I think outside of that, they're using reinforcement learning for exactly this step-by-step teaching it how to think. That's how OpenAI puts it. So very interesting.
Yep.
I think at the bottom, and we're moving towards this because you could already think of it, you know, these different pieces and elements as agents, maybe, question mark. And I do see time and again that we are moving towards agents in our personal environment, personal assistants, and at the end, and the same thing in our business environment. I just had the discussion this early morning at a request, somebody thinking of a platform for the agents in the industrial environment. And I think that's what we're going to see. And I'm bottom line, not surprised that reinforcement learning is going to be playing a structural element under the hood.
Yeah, in the main part, we will also talk about agents, because Rainer Brehm explains a little bit the Siemens strategy on agents. And I have also something on agents, because agents as a digital part-time employees in after sales for machine building companies.
All right.
And these AI agents take over the time-consuming spare parts inquiries. It's called Shop Floor GPT. It was introduced by Illunic, AI integrator in Munich. And I will do a recording about these topics because spare parts is a huge topic for the machine building companies. And if an agent can help you to organize this spare parts inquiries, that sounds very interesting and very helpful. Yeah.
Looking forward to, So now we start talking about agents, right?
Yes,
maybe are we still going to talk?
That was your idea. You started with the agents.
Well, it wasn't necessarily me, but I'm a big supporter, I'm so convinced that, and in the end, it doesn't really matter what we call it, right? I mean, I believe the top level is going to be a thing called assistant. And if we don't call it assistant, we're still going to call it, you know, whatever we hold in our hand all the time. You know, it's a smartphone. We don't call it smartphone. Here we call it handy. Handy, which is actually not a bad word, because in the English it means, you know, it's a handy thing. It helps you to do things. And that's exactly what it's going to be. And below that, there's going to be all these terms which we have had for a year or two now. We call them large language models. Sure, we will continue to do that when we talk about technology and we share technology with you, the listener, who develop exactly these technologies. But I think at the end, at the highest level, I, as a human, as a consumer, you know, I'm going to continue to use something like the smartphone, the handy, as we call it here. And below that, there's going to be, you know, pieces of software. And whatever they are, they're call them agents, and they're going to, and the interface is going to be some kind of large language model, et cetera, et cetera. And in the end, we talk about what are the use cases, as you just suggested, one example, Robert.
What else do you have, Peter?
Second one is interesting, something completely different from Trumpf, which we know as the laser steel cutting machine provider, right? Manufacturer. And you may have heard about Jens Ottner. And Jens was, well, you have certainly, and also some of our listeners, because he was part of our original AI conference team, right? From the very first time, I think the first time we did it in Würzburg. Now, he, in the meantime, has moved to be part and to become the head of global training, and he has introduced a new AI course. Mm-hmm. I think that's very, very interesting. He was so structurally involved in our first AI conference activities. When was that?
Three years ago, I think, yeah.
Okay, and now he's welcoming over 100 students, talents, young people to the Trumpf Education Center. What is, of course, very important, we talked about it as we met just the end of last week, over the weekend. You know, these are economic challenging times, and it's so good to see that they behave in an, you know, anti-cyclical mm-hmm. manner, right? You know, I think actually where so many things people are not happy happening in Europe, maybe in Germany, I think that's at least one good thing. When things economically don't look that well, we have a way here of making sure that we don't have to lay off people. Maybe we can exactly do this as Jens does with his people, you know, get them trained, you know, show me, don't tell me, is his concept. He says, you know, he wants to be the number one 2030 in the area of AI and in his specific market. And he says, if I think about what it is that we want to be and that we're going to do, we also better think about, you know, who are going to be the people who are going to be the new colleagues together with the existing colleagues that are going to be building these machines and services.
I asked Jens already to come to the podcast and share his curriculum and a little bit the ideas behind it.
It's a good point. I was going to look at the curriculum this morning.
It's not online, right?
It's still somewhere here, but I didn't get to it. And interesting that you say, yeah, you could theoretically start where we started, 5 years ago in German, industrial AI, KI in der Industrie 001.
Yes.
And you could actually, I think a lot of it is still valid, but I would be looking forward as well. Of course, the area of industrial AI is so awfully fast. But then the basics, and I'll talk of another, we just talked of one, reinforcement learning, which is one very small element, but it's so fast. But I think it's really very, very good. Very, you know, I wanted to share, and you already did at the same time. So we're going to be hearing more from Jens. You know, some of you listeners may want to copy exactly that idea. And I think Jens is not doing it completely by himself, but I think there is an institution with, yes, you know, researchers, professional people doing the training course. So that's that.
Perfect. We received a lot of feedback on the last episode, and that was with Albert van Bremen from Eindhoven.
Cucumbers,
yeah. And that's why I'd like to mention that Albert will also be part of our event with the Hannover Messe in Frankfurt in January next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I was also very impressed with that podcast that you did with him for a couple of reasons, right? Number one, you know, although he was born elsewhere, I believe, but now he's in the Eindhoven area. And as you suggested, this is one in the range of podcasts we do with the booming city of Eindhoven. And I wasn't born too far away from Eindhoven. And when he talks about the AI-based robotics vision in a natural growing of plants, you know, that seems to be so difficult, complex, and then he brings me back to exactly my use, where most of the time, my free time, holidays, I spend with cucumbers or strawberries, as you just mentioned. Actually, where I was working, I think we distributed, you know, billions of strawberry plants. There were like hundreds of people working, or salad. And it's so interesting to now, which is now, you know, so many years later, see him come with solutions for robotics in this area. And again, when I make exactly that relationship of the hundreds of people that were standing there doing, you know, working with these plants, which these days we can, or many times we cannot, you know, we cannot find people or not enough people. So it's very interesting what you did, the discussion that you had with Albert there.
Yeah, I think you were a little bit skeptical about the use case, but a lot of people wrote me an email and said, yeah, that's interesting. The cucumber approach is interesting because we also have a lot of flexible parts on our shop floor. So we can transfer this. And this is the idea sometimes to go in different industries, food industry, and maybe we can transfer something or learn something for our approaches, right?
That's where I completely agree with you, and that's what is very important. Yeah, and I think some of you already do that, some of you haven't, and it's exactly that idea. You think, what, cucumbers? What do I have to do with cucumbers? You know, I'm producing cars. Well, yeah, exactly that. The idea is just listen and learn from somebody else in a completely different market and think, oh, you know, what he's doing with cucumbers, I can be doing with pieces of my door in my factory or whatever. No, from that perspective, I do. But it was exactly that discussion, and it's very good to get feedback from you, listeners, on exactly that. At the core of what we do is industrial AI, and sometimes we go a little bit outside just for you to get new ideas.
Perfect. What else, Peter?
The European Commission, well, I don't really like talk too much about Europe and how we're not doing things. In this case, very short message. They have a call for proposal, AI factories. I think when they talk about AI factories, it's a terminology that was used by Jensen, right? Did he introduce the, you know, the...
Oh, I'm not sure.
NVIDIA CEO months or two back, and also that time it was like AI factory. Oh, wow. And I thought industrial AI, you know, for industrial, I think what it was meant to be like is a factory full of AI, so to say, and you can produce with it whatever you want. And I think that's what they're looking at, because they want to create them around a network of supercomputers. There is this European high-performance computing supercomputers. I looked at the list. I think we already heard about Lumi. Do you recall Lumi. Finland?
Yep, Lumi.
Well, because in the meantime, AMD guys, right? Yep. They were running exactly on that supercomputer. They have these fancy names, Lumi, Leonardo. I think there's one in Bologna, Barcelona, Portugal. So there's already a list of these. And so if you are a startup, an industry player or a researcher, so they are already also for you industry player startups, you know, make sure that you're going to connect to them. It is one approach. I'm not sure it is the approach. You know, it's of course about the availability of CPU, which typically we do not have, not originated out of Europe, like the ones of AWS and Microsoft and Google and a couple of others. We do, of course, have different size, but maybe this is an alternative for some of you out there.
Perfect. And your last news is a bitter lesson.
That's going to be related exactly to this. For those of you that hadn't heard, The Bitter Lesson by Rich Sutton. By the way, Rich is the reinforcement learning pioneer, if not the greatest. He is one of the people who came with the idea. So, and he says, and he wrote this already a couple of years back, I just wanted to share, and it's because it's exactly about all about CPU, right? And it's not to share with you because he says it's the bitter lesson. I'm sorry to maybe to be sharing this, but it's his thought, not mine. And he says that the biggest lesson that can be read from 70 years of AI research is that general methods that leverage computation, so CPU, are ultimately the most effective by a large margin. He makes a relation to Moore's law. Basically, what he's saying is like, you know, try to be as smart as you can, right?
Sure.
And that's what we do. That's what you researchers do. It's your job. I'm not saying stop doing that. But he does say, between the lines, the bitter lesson is that if we follow Moore's law, and Moore's law is not that, and it even seems like we're going faster and faster and faster, if then a year later the available CPU at a fraction of the cost is available to you, then suddenly you or your colleagues in your specific area make a huge jump. I think that's what he's saying, right? So he's saying, like, be smart, try to find new ways, and that's what we're all doing in the industrial AI environment. But he does say that if we look back, it was always CPU that brought us there. So maybe it's an understanding of why a number of global companies, we just talked about the European supercomputers,
sure,
that is one small piece, I would say. And it is, of course, then the Googles, the big tech, the AWS, it is the OpenAI, Microsoft, going for CPU in a way that we just cannot imagine. And it is exactly along these lines of the bitter lesson, because they believe in those that have most computing power will eventually be the first to move to the next level of artificial intelligence.
Perfect, Peter. And now let's move on to the main part. And we are having a real talk, I would call it, with Rainer Brehm. Rainer is the CEO of the Factory Automation Business Unit by Siemens.
Real talk, you say, because he's very... We met him.
We saw him.
A couple of months back. That was the Siemens event here in Munich, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he described a little bit the development of the Copilot, I think it was, the engineering Copilot. And he was, I think he's very...
Open, honest.
Very honest, yeah.
Yeah, very straightforward, yeah. Yeah, he was not afraid to be talking about, you know, we moved this one step and then we found out it was wrong. So, you know, we had to find another way of doing things. So that was so good about his presentation, that he was showing the different steps that they had been taking, and he was so straightforward and honest about, you know, we didn't get it right the first time. So from that perspective, I'm very much looking forward to your talk with him, yeah.
Peter, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Robert, have a good day. You, dear listener, have a good day, and hope to have you with us again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest today is Rainer Brehm. He's the CEO of the Siemens Factory Automation Business Unit. I would say the diamond in the company. Rainer, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Rainer, you've been on our podcast before. Back then, we talked about PLC, control system, edge devices, and AI. I would say that were good scalable topics. Today, we are talking about Gen AI and agents. You still sell PLCs, right? But can you sell Gen AI? What is your opinion?
Well, first of all, yes, we still sell PLC. And the good thing is, since the last podcast, we also sell much more edge devices.
Which congrats. Is
also,
congrats.
Also a good sign. And that's also a good sign because I think a lot of the edge devices are going to be a basis for AI inference, for example. Yeah, to download an AI network into edge devices for inference. That's good. The question is, can we sell Gen AI? Well, we don't sell yet. Maybe come onto that on the on the podcast. Yep. But we have a product out there which can be used in productive use. But yes, I strongly believe we can sell it, even so it's not 100% clear what is the best way to sell it and what is the best value for our customers how to do that.
What are your ideas how to sell?
Well, first of all, large language models are in everybody's mind and there's very fast development. So therefore, we have strong technology partners we're working with, but we still need to investigate, you know, what are the right things moving forward and also to commercialize. First of all, I mean, there are two topics, yeah, which we can sell. Number one, it's definitely a help for the topic of automation engineering. Mm-hmm. And automation engineering is, you know, PLC, PLC code, PLC testing, PLC code testing, documentation, creation of HMI images, hardware configuration, wire diagrams, and so on. I mean, that is on the engineering side, which we already have on the market. I mean, we announced that we will bring a product on the market, which happened then in July. We have it as a product. Mm-hmm. Status quo is we are not monetizing on it. Customer can download it and use it, but still the LLMs we support currently Microsoft, it needs to be purchased directly from the customer with Microsoft.
Exactly.
And maybe we can go a little bit deeper on that one. And the other one is I think it's very exciting where we don't have a product yet, but a lot of interest from customers and a lot of prototypes already on how we use LLMs in the phase of operation, operating a machine, operating a line.
Okay. From my point of view, LLMs will become so commodity that in the end, your customer will tell you, oh yes, Rainer, it's nice to have this co-pilot, but we want to have it for free because it's commodity.
I mean, first of all, the good thing is it needs to create value. I mean, number one, yeah? And if it creates value and the value is commodity, probably you're right. Currently, we see there is still a lot of cost involved. So also, if you look at our cost, what's the cost we need to give to our technology partners in order to run it, it's definitely not for free. And the inference is expensive. Yeah. So even so, there is cost associated of, you know, executing those LLMs. And that will not go away. Maybe in GPUs going to be cheaper and hopefully they need to be cheaper, yeah, because the current situation is not sustainable, at least not from automation use cases. So it need to be cheaper, but still there will be cost, number one. Number two, then the question is what value we can generate, what volume we can generate compared to others. And let's see it. Maybe the value will be not purely in the LLM, but how you prompt it, how you use it, how you combine them. And we put a lot of money into it. So basically, I also want to get some money out.
Okay.
But, you know, always you need to create customer value and then let's see how we monetize it.
You already mentioned your technology partner, Microsoft. And Peter and I were invited to your event and you presented your Gen AI journey. Would you like to share your journey with us a bit?
Well, we started early very much on the technology. So it was not like, I think it was in January 23 when ChatGPT became so famous. Mm-hmm. We investigated on those topics earlier on already and our technology part and we looked what's possible. So we started that journey already. But as we have seen then in January, it becomes so popular. We decided in January, well, you know, we bring it on the Hannover Fair, which is in April. So which was a quite short time. At that time, we showed it on the booth of Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But, you know, showing something on a fair, which was not a fake, it was really running, yeah. But then having it ready from legal and commercial terms, having it tested, industrialized it, that's a big journey. And I talked about that journey. And, you know, should I go into some details on that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I want to know how you make a LLM industrial grade.
Yeah, first of all, LLMs still change and our customers expect a certain constant output. Yeah.
Exactly.
So therefore, one big effort was, you know, when a new version came out, we figured out the results are different. So how can we guarantee that the results are somehow consistent? And that is for me also industrial grade, number one. Number two, how we make sure that, you know, it works always with the latest version. So we did a lot of testing. So our system test was normally used more for static topics. There is really dynamic and how you do a system test that, you know, what we grade is industrial grade. It grades always this the same valid output for a customer. Big efforts. We have really underestimated that.
Why you underestimated that?
Because we didn't have experience. Mm-hmm. what is our system just doing? We are implementing a function and that function is tested.
Yes.
Now having AI build it in, you put an input and the output might differ depending on the configuration, but depending on a prompt, depending on maybe the LLMs you're using, which version you're using, that normally there are too many variables where we need to adapt our testing. I think that is on the test side. On the other side, I mean, I mentioned also that there is still, and I think we're getting better and better, there were a lot of questions in from very much legal driven, yeah? And maybe, I don't know whether Siemens is a little bit more paranoia on that topic than others, but we want to make sure that...
I hear this always when I talk to Bosch, we are a little bit paranoia. Siemens is also a little bit paranoia. I think everybody in the industrial sector is paranoia when it comes to legal, yeah?
Maybe, Robert, that also depends on the size of a company.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not because maybe Siemens people are very...
Afraid
of law or whatever. It might be simply, we want to guarantee something, but if we do some infringement, if companies are about eager to claim other companies, big companies, normally much better target.
Mm-hmm,
so the probability that a large company is going to be targeted if there is an infringement, it's higher than a smaller company because simply you could get more. So therefore, the paranoia might be a little bit bigger at bigger companies, at smaller companies. If I would be a startup,
yeah,
I might be not as concerned as a bigger company. I mean, that's a point, yeah. Yeah, but it's definitely a topic, you know, what you generate code, and when you generate the code, is that code doing some infringement on copyrights? Yeah, that is always a topic where we do a lot of hell of work of doing kind of open source clearing at every release we're doing. But if we now generate code, how can we make sure we don't infringe any open source topics? Yeah, and how?
Yeah, exactly.
And if we would
how give do you handle that? How do you handle that?
Well, we put it in two sides. We really are checking the code and doing a constant clearing of what is generated. So we cannot 100% guarantee it, but we at least can say we did our best effort to guarantee it will not happen.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and is this enough for your customers?
At least the probability is high enough that there's always a little bit of risk in there. Yeah, still, you cannot guarantee 100%, but the probability is quite low. And we also do that when we are using also now inside our company, I mean, generative AI to generate code.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, we really tested every code which came out. Is there any infringement? Then we said, okay, please label every line which was generated, just in case something happened, we can take it out again, that we know what happened. We still do that, by the way.
Okay. Yeah?
But we get more and more confident that we can somehow, you know, with the tests we have in parallel, that we don't do an infringement. So therefore, I think the paranoia goes down. But it took us a certain time to get to a certain certainty. Yeah, I think that is one topic.
Yeah.
And the other topic is as well, there are no copyrights for machine-generated code.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be an issue for us as a company. We are producing a product, and normally when we put efforts in there, we also want to have the IP, the rights on that, what we generated, which is not possible on a machine-generated code. The same would apply for our customers. Yeah. So you need to be aware on how to handle those circumstances. I mean, that's
another topic. So do we need a new discussion on open source AI and industrial AI? Because in the moment we have a discussion in open source talking about, okay, what is the open source model when it comes to AI with weights and this code, etc. But your problem is a totally different problem. And I think the GitHub Copilot may have also this problem too. Do we need a discussion in the communities and Apache Foundation, Eclipse Foundation to tackle this problem?
I think this discussion is going on already. I think currently, let's see how in the US, I think that's anyway a topic where, you know, there are maybe some lawsuits which would come up, and then you're going to see how the reaction on the courts is about that,
yeah.
How severe this is seen. So therefore, there is still, I think this discussion is necessary to really understand, you know, what are copyrights, and I don't want to infringe copyrights. This is not my goal as Siemens at all. I thought that I really want to make sure that if I use copyrights, I'm going to pay for that. So that's not my goal. But, you know, it might hinder somehow that, you know, that strict view on it hinder maybe innovations. Yeah. And then I think we should have a discussion because I think everybody wants to drive forward customer value and innovation.
Okay. And you mentioned at the event that when Microsoft changed the model a bit, then you got huge problems, right?
Yeah. And that was I was mentioning, that's the reason why we put a lot of testing then around it to, you know, identify it and correct it if necessary.
Okay. Why does everyone rely on Microsoft? Is it the best model or is it the best product or is it the best service?
Well, I think they were kind of front running using OpenAI. And still, if you look at 4 or 4.0, it's still, for our use cases, it's still a very valid one. Mm-hmm. But what we are doing, like probably a lot of other companies are doing, we investigating also others. So looking at Bedrock, at Gemini, looking at Mistral, other topics, looking also in China, what large language models are available there. So definitely we are investigating for what use cases, where we get the best value for money. Because the one topic is it could be the greatest, but if the cost simply is double, but it's, you know, others are good enough, then probably would also go to a good enough network. Yeah? It needs to be the best price value ratio. And therefore, we're investigating what are the right ones. Currently, still, I think Microsoft is advanced, yeah, but very expensive. That's also the reason why we need to figure out what is, you know, your first question was how you're going to monetize it. Currently, if I want to monetize it, I need to put a price in there, which some customers would tell me, you know, what?
Are you crazy, Rainer?
Exactly.
Are you crazy, Rainer?
Exactly. So therefore, we need to investigate also what use cases do we have, to what use cases, what large language model fits. And therefore, yes, we have a strategic partnership with Microsoft, but this is not at all exclusivity.
So when I talk to startups or when I see publications from startups in big newspapers, everybody is now doing chatbots for the industrial sector, right? So they changed their business model and now everybody's programming and building chatbots and co-pilots, they also call it co-pilots for the industrial sector, for the mid-sized company, et cetera, et cetera. But when I listen to you, that sounds very, 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 very difficult. And a lot of people work on this industrial co-pilot. What is the difference to other maybe startups who create chatbots and co-pilots for the industry when it comes to a Siemens product? What is so different? Is it maybe over-engineered by Siemens or what is so special?
Normally, we want to have a more holistic view on aspects. So when we launched now this co-pilot in July, we got already significant input from customers what they expect on top of that, what we delivered.
Okay.
So it's, and you know, on the Hannover Fair, I think we also showed that we're looking on the co-pilot. If you do one very, very specific task, you know, it might be easier. Looking on it holistically, and holistically not only means looking holistically from an automation space or code engineering, HMI engineering, but even looking it more holistically. And we want to really have co-pilot starting from a product design, product engineering phase into the simulation, into the operations phase, up to the service. And looking at that more holistically, I think that's the effort. But it's interesting, our customers are asking for that. It was, we brought out the first product, we said, let's bring it out, let's learn. And we learn, well, they want to have more. They want to have it more holistically, and therefore we need to put all the efforts into that.
So how many co-pilots will there actually be? So it's the engineering co-pilot, right? And you mentioned the operation co-pilot.
Yes, so the engineering co-pilot is for automation engineering, yeah, right? And then we have the operation co-pilot, which is not yet on the market, yeah, which we are developing, which we are further developing, evaluating it. That's more for the operations phase. So basically, it's an assistant for machine operators. And that is in the operations phase. Now, if you look at that one, we probably will have a co-pilot which goes into the service or the maintenance planning. Mm-hmm. So what you could imagine is, you know, you might now detect an error in a machine by the co-pilot, but you need to open a service request. Or maybe you need to schedule a maintenance request.
Now we are talking about agents, right?
Now, yeah, exactly. Now you break it down to agents, right? This is what we want agent. But then the agent also need to find a counter, an agent somewhere on the maintenance side to contact. And there will be also maybe a co-pilot on the service side. We have, for example, a predictive maintenance solution called SenseEye. They're also leveraging now a co-pilot doing a maintenance planning. But the interesting thing now is looking at agents, that is now, we talked a lot in a Siemens universe under the aspect, well, Siemens has a tool A and B, and maybe we combine it. I strongly believe it's going beyond.
Yeah, the agents must communicate with the others. Yeah.
Exactly. So what about if you then have a service request and you go to ServiceNow, and not to Siemens, but you go to ServiceNow and say, hey, now I'm, because, and then maybe ServiceNow needs all the interface for an agent or being represented as an agent. Where you can go say, no, do the service request and hand this over. So I think we need to, currently, I think it's a lot of manual work, a lot of, you know, the tools are operated by a human. I think in the future, those tools will be combined. So within the Siemens space, they're going to be probably a lot of co-pilots, yeah, which are communicating maybe via agents or directly with a user. But that needs to be expanding beyond Siemens ecosystem of services and tools to the market.
What kind of new infrastructure do we need for this?
Well, first of all, I mean, a lot of the current topic runs in the cloud and it could run on a private cloud or on a public cloud.
But when we talk about agents, do we need new standards, for example, for agents?
A good question. And honestly, I mean, if good question, I don't have an answer yet on that question. But probably, yes. I mean, if we look at data formats of, you know, how are standardized APIs, how to do that, mm-hmm. I don't know how much this is already in a discussion in industrial space, how to do that. Mm-hmm. But normally in the past, I would say, yes, you need to standardize because else you don't find the agent and you don't know how to call the agents and you don't know what is the output of the agent, how to interpret that output of an agent, how to take it to the next one. So yes, probably there need to be a certain standardization. Good question. I don't have an answer yet, honestly, Robert.
Yeah, and only you would use the Siemens agents. I also want to use the ServiceNow agents. I want to use the...
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not only whether it's a lock-in. I think if you look currently at the landscape running in the industry, mm-hmm. there are many companies and you know they are interacting somehow differently, but they might interact in the form of agents. So therefore, to fulfill a task is actually necessary. It's not only because of lock-in, simply to fill a task, you cannot stay within a company.
How difficult is it from your point of view in a traditional machine building company, orders a PLC at Siemens, TIA Portal, et cetera, et cetera. And now you tell him, okay, you have to use a co-pilot or you can use a co-pilot. Then we have agents. How difficult is it for him or for her to deploy all these ideas and these layers on their shop floor?
Good question. I can simply tell you, depends. When we brought out now the product end of July, our industrial co-pilot, what we figured out, larger companies didn't have a big problem.
Sure. Schaeffler is your first customer, right?
Yeah, Schaeffler yep. or other yep. like bigger end customers with certain IT infrastructure. It's fine. They know how to do it. You know, we said, well, we described it very well, how to combine our industrial co-pilot with Microsoft. Yeah. One of the biggest requests is Siemens. Okay, all fine, but I want it from you as a managed service.
Okay.
So you see already that integration, we try to make it as easy as possible, is already a hurdle. And this is only combining one industrial co-pilot with one LLM.
And yeah? You are also responsible for the certification and et cetera, right?
Yeah, and that basically, a lot of things comes on top. That's a reason, one of the reasons why if we are not 100% sure how we can guarantee everything, yeah, we don't yet offer it as a service. Plus the pricing model we have discussed in the beginning. These are still topics to be evaluated, yeah, to have a fair pricing, but not taking a risk for the customer, not taking a risk for us. So therefore, yes, that's a work where we now already see that customer says, please give me it as a service. And probably that if it goes beyond one co-pilot, the combination of several co-pilots, including agents, big customers will manage it, smaller customers will ask for a service.
But I think you have to do that business because on the other side, they are the big hyperscaler, they want to do the MLOps part, they want to do the infrastructure, and then they say, okay, we can manage that too for you.
Yeah, but they're also not interested to go into very specific domains.
Right. That's right.
So therefore, yes, they have a GitHub Copilot, but this is for software development. If you go now into PLC development or deployment...
A different story, yeah.
That's a different story, yeah. So therefore, I think they're happy if we are working on that one and providing, you know, with our domain knowledge and the language of our customer, that service to those customers.
But there is a discussion at Siemens how we can build a business model out of GenAI and agents, and is it as a service model, right?
Yes, there is a discussion, and currently we only get it as a service. So there's no way that we're going to sell it differently than as a service. At least that applies for the engineering co-pilot. Let's see of, you know, how we do it on the operation side, because I think there's also what we see, a big request, I want to run something on-premise. Mm-hmm. And then you might also can be capable to discuss a different business model, maybe as a subscription, but not as a service because it runs on-premise. So we need to differentiate, you know, is it on the engineering side, which I think more it goes into as a service. On the operations use case, it might be different.
Peter and I, we had a discussion, I think, two episodes back, and we talked about new operating systems, new Gen AI platforms. And I said to Peter, from my point of view, the industry or the industrial sector is not interested in more layers. What is your opinion on that when you talk to your customers?
I see it the same way. It's even then too complex. And having all that integration costs, if somebody takes that away, that's already a big value. Yeah? Number one. Number two, from our perspective on Siemens side, well, we have the PLC layer. We introduced our last podcast, Industrial Edge. For us, Industrial Edge is somehow an additional layer. But as you see, we're also now moving a PLC workload, like our virtual PLC runs on Industrial Edge. We're also moving PLC workload onto that layer. But for me, that layer also need to be good enough to run all different workloads. And is it an inference of a large language model needs to be run on that layer. So and that's hard enough to introduce the new layer.
Exactly.
So therefore, having additional one, I think I'm with you. That's already enough.
Reinhard, you talked about agents a little bit, the future auto. Tell us a bit what else you are working on. What is maybe something from the R&D department they showed you and you said, oh, that's great. I need to share this with Robert because that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I might not share everything.
But tell us a bit.
No, I mean, as I discussed, maybe we are quite open what we're doing, and you know that Industrial Copilot for operations is definitely one which is very, very important.
So you mentioned it's operation, but it's also you mentioned also simulation, right? Or what is
it? Yeah, well, on the let's start with the operations. There we want to show something as an on-premise solution. Not yet, yeah. Currently goes into cloud, and we have seen, for example, on Hannover Fair, when you go into cloud, the response time to a machine was quite long. And also the cost, by the way, is not in an area where a customer would say to operate a machine, I pay now €1,000 a month
for again.
Yeah, exactly. So we need to find ways how to do that. And, you know, with running on our IPCs, with hardware accelerator cards, I think that's going to be something which I think is exciting, which works, number one. And number two, what I'm also... But that goes more into the product design phase. Uh-huh. Having a co-pilot, you know, as we are very strong as Siemens on the CAD side, the PLM side, and also in that area, you know, where you also do engineering, product engineering, yeah, like CAD, I think they're also excited that there are already a lot of things where large language model could help to support on the design side, yeah. And that's something which is not on the market, but I think there I've seen also something which I was very surprised how you could use then a large language model to also do a CAD design, for example.
What did you see?
You know, designing a vehicle, yeah.
Okay.
Let's put it this way.
Okay. Okay. Exactly. Do you have one more thing you want to share?
Well, the other topic is on the AI side. Now, everybody talks about generative AI.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is
Let's talk about the good old-fashioned AI.
The good old-fashioned AI. And I think also on the good old-fashioned AI, you know, you always have the anecdotes, oh, we did this and we did this and we did this. What we have figured out, it didn't really scale at any customers. You always have a very dedicated use case, and this use case works somehow and it's fine, but you know, it's always a high additional effort to go from use case A to use case B. Mm-hmm. And what we said, well, you know, let's on those use cases which are scaling, let's put a product into place where AI is built in, but you don't see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that basically we show that system, and we have already showed it a little bit on the fair, where you can machine vision using AI, but you don't have any clue about machine vision, any clue about AI. You simply show the
object, it's a camera, right?
A camera, but you show 20 good samples, press a button, network is trained, and it runs. Yeah, so no AI capabilities, no vision capability, it runs. Then we have the other topic, customers have domain knowledge, maybe a little bit on vision knowledge, but they don't have a clue about AI. But this we're going to offer. But we also offer now something where we really want to have four AI-minded people, mm-hmm. Infrastructure where you can use AI on the shop floor. And basically, that is a complete cycle of collecting data, training networks in the cloud, could be done in SageMaker on AWS, or could be done in Azure. Then deploy that networks, having the inference on Industrial Edge, doing a monitoring of those networks and feeding it back into the cloud for certain training purposes. So having that round trip and having that infrastructure ready, not as a proof of concept, not of compiling some open source and doing it, but really having that as an infrastructure to do AI and focusing on the main topic, that's something which is also not on the market in an industrial grade use case. And we're going to bring this also on the market. And that would be probably something, if you look in the next SBS sphere, which you can explore.
Perfect. One more question at the end. From my point of view, when we talk to, let's say, mid-sized machine building companies, not the Schaefflers, not the Trumpfs or the Arburgs or something like that, they tell me always, oh, we need an AI integrator. Do we see AI integrators coming to the industrial sector?
Yes. And you also already see, I wouldn't say it's only AI integrators,
okay.
It's IT integration.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, it goes back into a classical, I would say now, I mean, they mean by classical IT-OT integration or, you know, what we talked about, Industrial Edge. There are more and more integrators coming more from the IT space.
But they have no domain-specific knowledge when it comes to PLC programming.
Yeah, maybe. But there, for example, a Copilot could be interesting.
Ah, okay. Oh, so a new customer, okay.
Yeah, or you go to a virtual PLC and say you can operate the PLC like you operate an IT workload, you operate now an OT workload, and it's easier for them to do that. What we currently see that especially those big IT integrators like a Capgemini, a Deloitte, and so on, Accenture, they are very interesting. They do acquisitions on the market. They are very interested to move into that space. Yeah. As you said, they might not have the domain knowledge, but I think they have a financial power. So we see those companies moving into it. They're coming with the IT domain knowledge. OT gets more IT minded. They acquire some companies. So I see them as a partner in that area more and more.
And where do you see Siemens next year?
I would be happy if we can provide this to a mass of customer on an easy way without a lot of integration efforts. We can talk about the latest and greatest, and yes, probably as we discussed, you're going to move forward on agents and so on technology side, but the bigger impact we would have scaling a standard solution onto a broad customer basis.
If Do you we think are there, agents are the new hype? Is the new hype?
At least it's definitely interesting stuff. Automation tasks are complex. You know, you need to break it down to smaller topics. It's definitely worthwhile. It's definitely worthwhile looking at that. The other topic, it's need to be worthwhile looking at, as we discussed, you know, making it more affordable, bringing large language model down to a size which is from a compute performance feasible, running it on premise, having a cost situation which is important. That's also innovation, yeah. And I think this is also it moves into this direction as well.
Rainer, thank you very much. It was again a pleasure to talk to you. All the best for you, your co-pilot, your team, and for your guys with the old-fashioned AI.
Thank you, Robert. I invite you to the SBS fair, also to all your listeners. We're going to show a lot of great new stuff there.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.